Hello, listeners. Matt Tropiano here. You're listening to the premiere episode of Doom Radio's new program, Knee Deep in the Code. This program aims to shed some light on some of the unsung heroes in the Doom community, namely the programmers, so fair warning, the content of this show may get quite technical in some places. To mitigate this, however, I brought along Doom community member and Doom Radio veteran Zazer to serve as my everyman to bring the conversation back to a more manageable level. This episode, however, Zazer didn't get too much airtime due to, well, the tendency for two nerds to talk passionately about their disciplines at length. Next episode, I hope to rectify this, so apologies to Zazer fans. That being said, if you're still here, stick around for the rest of the broadcast. You won't be disappointed. Thank you. Hello, and welcome to Knee Deep in the Code on Doom Radio, a brand spanking new show about some of what I would consider the unsung heroes of the Doom community, the programmers and utility writers that make the Doom engine the most approachable platform out there. Joining me this episode is my co-host, Zazer.
Aloha.
And with us in the studio today is our very special guest, Pascal von der Heyden, or you might know him better as Codimp. Say hello, Pascal.
Hey, hello, hello.
So, Pascal here is a oh my god, I just can't believe we got him for the first episode because this is not responsible for the Doom mapping renaissance we've seen since 2004, especially with a Doom builder, But first, I'd like to get to know a little bit about your background, Pascal. What came first, your interest in Doom or interest in programming?
I think it was Doom. I think it was Doom. I remember my father came home with a portable computer. We call them laptops these days, but you can't call it that at the time when you know what I mean. And He brought a shareware of Doom with him, and he showed it to me. And I remember that I was used to games. You know, I played Commander Keen and Duke Nukem and Lemmings, mm-hmm. all sorts of games. And I never seen Wolfenstein. I've never seen that game. I'm not sure why, but
What country are you from? Are you from the Netherlands?
Netherlands.
Oh, the Netherlands. Okay, yeah, so you kind of basically had access.
It's not Bennett here or anything like that.
Right. How it is in Germany.
Yeah.
You should see XKCD's version of the Netherlands. You may approve of this. Sorry, I'm making references. Terrible.
That's okay.
No, it's fine here. It probably just there wasn't internet at the time, right? So we didn't have it, at least. So I just didn't get to see it. My father showed this game to me, and I was kind of amazed. I never saw a game where a 3D game where you're looking from the player's perspective. That was completely new concept for me, and it impressed me so much. That's basically what caught me and what kept me interested in Doom. I think that the first impressions that the game gave me, and later I started programming. I think that was at when I was like 12 years old.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
That was just simple. That was GW Basic, I believe they call it.
Oh yeah. I got my start with Q Basic way back when, but it seemed like everybody back then started with some kind of basic or some kind of a command-based language because I guess it was easy to learn.
Yeah, and I believe it came free with the operating system, standard stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Were you attracted more to the gameplay of Doom or kind of the technology then? It sounds more like the technology part was more of
the technology part was very interesting, no doubt. It was groundbreaking, but also the gameplay kind of impressed me, especially the horror ambiance, the what do you call it, the suspense in the game,
right. Kind of like it's dark mood, or it's
yeah definitely that was and there were scary moments and I was a little kid, you know,
yeah.
and this was brand new, never seen something like this, so yeah, it was a bit scary sometimes. And yeah, that impressed me. That a simple game on the computer, games were simple at the time. A simple game at the computer just impressed me that much. It did a lot to me.
So I guess that portable computer had some kind of, I guess, digital sound.
Well, it wasn't the portable computer. Was just when my father came home with that game later. We just put it on I believe an IBM 368 or 386. Mm-hmm. What do you call those?
Yeah.
Yeah, one of those machines. Yeah.
386. That's the one. This is kind of interesting to me hearing about it because I was 3 at the time, so I got to see the game and I. Forgive me for kind of interjecting, but you did say that it is the first 3D game you saw from the first perspective too, and it's the same for me too, except at the time I was about 3 years old and sitting in my dad's lap watching him play it. So
scarred for life.
This is what happens. So
I guess from the interest in Doom, you said, like, what was when you took your interest in programming and your interest in Doom, naturally they would come together in some fashion. Did you ever make something for Doom that like beforehand, or some kind of like utility or whatever before, say, one of your major works, Doom Connector?
Not really. Actually, when I started programming, I wrote my own simple games, like running through a maze, all two-dimensional, and there was no 3D. Really simple games. And no, actually, I didn't do anything with Doom. I did try level editing a bit. I had a CD. I can't recall the name, but it was one of those shovelware CDs.
Right.
And it had Wadded on it. What
yeah, I saw that in your some of your very early maps that you released to I guess CDROM.com.
Oh, you found one? Really?
Yeah, like well, it's I guess there's in the id Games archive, but I've had to delve a little into your past because I never really saw any maps that you made, like strange.
No, there's a few, but they're not noteworthy. Not so. No, really, I'm not that good at that. In fact, when I tried Wadded back in the time, I didn't even know it had different modes, editing modes or anything. I couldn't figure out how to draw anything, create anything. So basically, what I was stuck with is taking an existing map.
Right.
And drag some vertices around.
that's one way to do it.
Yeah. that's all I knew, and I was kind of disappointed that the editor could only do that. I was kind of expecting an editor that you could make your whole maps.
Yeah.
And I was kind of, what a stupid editor is this? I can only modify maps a little bit.
Yeah, like those old editors were not very easy to use, or like they weren't they didn't have the I'd say like not the ease of use, but like they were kind of cagey about how to create new things.
Yeah.
Like some editors, if I remember correctly, you had to create the vertices first, then add the lines. And then when you did that, you created a sector. And it was kind of obtuse. Like it was made how a programmer would approach making a map, not necessarily how your everyday person would, but
right. Straight. Yeah, but so I did a little bit of modding at the time. I also tried changing some of the resources, like pictures of monsters and sounds. So to answer your question, I didn't do any programming, probably because I wasn't good enough at the time to do that, to figure out the Doom format. I just didn't do it all. No.
Mm. So straying from talk about editors for a bit, I'd like to talk a little about your first major project that was released, say, to the community at large, Doom Connector.
Yes.
And that was, if I remember correctly, it was a kind of like a piece of matchmaking or like GameSpy-esque piece of software that would talk to certain source ports master servers and get server information.
Yeah, it was heavily influenced, inspired by MPlayer, which at the time I've been so much on MPlayer, playing Quake 2, Quake 3, that really inspired me, the way that worked. You know, you could set up a game together, you could chat together, you could set up that game, and launch it from there, right? So you're with a select few people that you want to play a game with, and you set it up, and everybody's like, okay, let's play, and you launch it, and there you go. That was so easy, and I did have internet at that time. You know, at some point we got internet. It was a dial-up modem. what was it? 14K4?
Oh yeah, 14K4.
Later we upgraded that, of course, and I could actually play games online. and so that inspired me really, and that's why I built Doom Connector, because there was this gap that we didn't have that really for Doom, and there was something before. When I started working on that project, I read on forums, people told me, and I looked it up, and there was an earlier attempt at such a thing, and it was called DoomServe.
Yeah,
and it was dead at the time I started on that project. There wasn't anything to be found about it really, that wasn't there. So I made this. Yeah.
So did you at the time, a lot of source ports kind of had a protocol for retrieving either master server information or single server information. Did that already exist on, say, the source ports like Doom Legacy or whatever or the like way back when? Or did you have to end up talking to source port developers saying, hey, I have this idea. Do you think it would be possible for you to add this kind of means of communication?
No, I think most actually already had some sort of protocol, some system in place, but I can't really remember, because I was really into Doom Legacy at the time. I didn't really spend much time with the other source ports. Didn't pay much attention to them. It actually started out not as a Doom connector. It started out as Doom Legacy connector.
Uh-huh.
There wasn't something for Doom Legacy, if I recall. There was, I mean, I must have missed it or something. I was like, you know, we should play online together with Doom Legacy, and they had this protocol in place, and then I made Doom Legacy Connector, and that was actually the first first way it was launched. It was solely for Doom Legacy,
that sounds like it kind of probably increased its popularity, or was like very, the reason why Doom Legacy became popular, because you actually had this additional piece of matchmaking software that made it easy to find games online.
Yeah. Maybe it was other people actually who came to me and said, you have to expand this idea, you have to make this for all source ports, right? And that's when I was like, that could work.
So people approached you about expanding, I guess, Doom Legacy connector to multiple ports. So I guess you had to write some kind of interface agnostic portions of Doom connector to make it work, right?
There's a system that we could use plugins for all source ports, and each one did its own way, really, because it kind of differed for one source port did it completely different than another.
Right.
So I wrote a plugin system, and that basically solved the problem.
so So the plugin system kind of enabled other developers to, say, add support for their source ports.
That too. But actually, other developers didn't put much effort in it to actually maintain the. In the end, I had to do them all myself. But yeah, that was fine. You know, you have I always have this how do you say that? A sort of urge. It's not an urge. I don't know what the English word for it is. You have this thing. If you start a project, right?
Right.
I have that. I have this thing that when I start a project, I have to finish it.
Yeah.
There's no way I'm gonna fail.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm gonna put all the effort in it to make it a success. And if that means I'm gonna have to write all the plugins for all the source ports, that's fine. I'll do it.
Right.
You know. So I just ask them. I just ask all the developers. You know, give me a description of your protocol, and I'll spend some time figuring it out and making it work.
Do you prefer to work by yourself, or are you open to help from others?
Oh no, I'm very open to help from others. Actually, at some point, I didn't do Doom Connector. I didn't write it on my own. I had help from other programmers at some point. There hasn't been actually much help with Doom Builder. I mean, not a fixed team of programmers, but I have some. I had help from people that sent me patches for corrections and stuff, so people were looking in the source code.
Right.
But right now I'm working on a major project.
Right. That would be Rampage M, right?
Yes, Rampage M, and the team is six large now, and we're still expanding.
This talk of the teams and of how Doom Connector was still kind of like. Then they have like a nebulous team and an outside help, and it had like other developers every once in a while joining in with the project. It seemed to have traded hands after a certain version, I believe.
The Doom Connector was a success and a failure. At the same time, actually, its success caused its failure.
Really? How do you think?
It's a horrible thing, and I didn't foresee it when I started a project. Well, you always have to learn something. I mean,
right.
you can learn without falling. what I mean is, it's all the people. And the politics that come with it, and you have to manage a community. You have to keep it in check, and there's people causing trouble. I mean, in all sorts of aspects, in all sorts of areas, and you get to deal with a lot of trouble. And
you mean like in terms of say cheating or what people want as features?
There is cheating. There's hackers. There's people that just want to cause trouble in the chat. I mean, you have these chats, right? So
right.
People, it's they're chatting with each other. They're online, and there's people causing trouble there. That could be spamming. There could be harassing other people. There's all sorts of things. So you need moderators to keep it in check.
Right.
And even that causes problems, because then one moderator is making a decision, kicks someone out, for example. And then a bunch of other people do not agree, so you have another problem.
Yeah, dare I say, this is probably the same type of problems that plague either Zdaemon or any other large...
It's with any community where people are able to communicate or interact online together. You always these problems appear, and it started to annoy me. I really got frustrated by it. So you get mixed feelings, because you want the project to succeed, right? So you want to do everything to make your project succeed. It's a very personal thing,
right?
Such a project, right? It's, you put a lot of effort in it, so you take things very personal, and so yeah, that kind of
So like the program kind of got away from you almost, like in its success, its co-option by the community wrested itself away from your control, or do you feel like maybe it was just like it's time to kind of let the community decide what to do with it and you had to move on to other things?
It's the way things go, yeah. It's not something, it's out of my control.
Mm.
And I'm not saying it is the community who does it or anything. I think it's just the way it grows, the way it's like nature. It's in human nature, and it's the way things work, and that's how it gets out of control, and that's the point where, to answer your question, is where I said, you know, guys, you can have it. Right. So and yeah, there's some trouble came up, and one party decided at some point to block our service or something. They didn't want to be involved with us anymore, and stuff like that. And I made a few decisions. I did a few things that I shouldn't have done. And then at some point, you know, I just gave up. I'm just like, you know, this isn't worth it anymore. I don't care anymore. It's at some point you just say,
I'm done, kind of.
Yeah, I'm done with this,
right.
Really. And that's the point where I actually shut it down completely. And I gave it to a few other people, actually. A few people asked me, can I have the source code? I want to make another version or start something else with it.
And that was, I said, and that was Carnival, I believe, or...
No, Carnival is another thing. Carnival didn't really ask for the source code or anything. Mm. We just discussed the option, making a sort of a new release that is a skull tag only.
Right.
And that didn't work out very well either.
Mm.
So I gave the source code to a few other people, and I told them, you know, you can do with it as you like, as long as you do not get me involved. Do not mention my name on it, that I had anything to do with it.
Yeah.
Wow. Because I really wanted to be done with it. I didn't really want to.
So you kind of disowned the program at some point.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And it, I believe later on it turned into something called Player Connector, which now you can connect to Quake, Quake 2, Quake 3 servers, and all the, I guess, the source ports that are compatible with that.
I've heard about it. I've never tried it anymore. I've never tried installing it and looking at what someone else made out of it. But indeed, I heard there was this Player Connector, and I believe a guy called Mr. Rocket, he started up also his own version of it, and I'm not sure if that supports other games, but that's what happens.
I guess that answers my question of, do you follow it still? I guess the answer is no.
No.
It's like it seems now like, why would you?
Okay. I guess what I'm kind of curious about is that more to do with just not really being that into multiplayer Doom these days or multiplayer games, or is there any sort of lingering, I don't really want to mess with it from the old days, or if that makes sense?
I think that the people that they're using it, they wouldn't care if they would be playing a game with me or anything. That would be fine, I think, but I just don't care about multiplayer, Doom multiplayer anymore. I've seen the politics that go along with it. That I don't want to be involved in that anymore. It's just it's got a bit of a stench.
Yeah, it's like it could be exhausting.
Yeah.
Right, so I guess later on after Doom Connector, you decided to, I guess, dial back the community involvement aspect with a mapping utility that everybody seems to love called Doom Builder.
Yeah.
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 I mean, like, it's a program that I'm sure, Zazer and I have used quite a bit.
I've got a certain build of it open in the background right now, actually. And the only reason I'm not mapping is because you guys would have to put up with this constantly. Right. So, but yes.
Yeah.
It's,
Doom Builder.
Yeah. That... what can be said that hasn't been said about Doom Builder? I mean, like, the whole... I've been, like, kicking myself because, like, I've been using it for the longest time, and I think last year I said, you know what, maybe I should email Pascal about it, say how much I really like it, so just so he knows, something like that.
That is kind of you. That is very kind of you.
Now I feel bad because I've never said thanks. And
now's your opportunity.
Dang. Now I don't even know what to say. It's like,
Well, anyways.
There's hundreds of people not saying anything. I'm fine with that as long as I see when I see that people are using it, I'm a happy man, really, because the fact that people are using it means that it's good and that it is a success. So there's no need to thank me. The fact that people are using it is good enough for me.
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, the kind of like the, well, not that no news is good news, but it's like you can just see that people are using it, and that's, I guess, satisfaction enough in some ways. Strangely, though, about Doom Builder, I've noticed, Pascal, you don't map very much at all, or at least release very much. And from what I've seen under you had another pseudonym back then, I believe Gherkin, was it?
Yeah. not the best choice of nicknames, but yeah, I had that.
But it's you tend to, I don't know, like you don't seem to map very much, but So what was the inspiration for making a Doom mapping program?
I think it was the experience of earlier. I haven't been with Doom all my life. I've been involved in Quake. I made a few maps for Quake 3, for Quake 2. And I use those editors, and I've been working a lot with Build, the Duke Nukem 3D editor.
Yeah, Ken Silverman, I believe, who made the engine. Yeah,
and I like that concept really, really, really much. That worked very well, and I noticed in the Doom community that there wasn't an editor alike. That worked that way. Like you mentioned earlier in this interview, is that most editors are working from a perspective from a programmer, and not really from the perspective of a user. How would a user want to do things? And it was mentioned on Doom Connector once by, I believe it was Mr. Rocket, that I should make a Doom map editor. And I said, no, I don't know all the formats or the structures, the things that are going on in the Doom engine, how I should make a map for that. I don't have the knowledge to do that. and that was back then. And after a while, I kind of figured it out and said, you know, let's do this. Let's make an editor that I like.
Yeah, because it seemed like way back when, like, the mostly people that were, like, you know, the hackers or the guys that kind of dissected the Doom format and figured out how everything was encoded or represented in binary format were the ones to make the editors. And yes. And those people were typically very very typically like machine minded, very like, well, this is how it kind of is, and I don't really have user interface in experience or stuff like that. So they just made something that worked that people could use, and that was good enough at the time. But I guess these days, with the internet and the proliferation of information, that made procuring that type of information a heck of a lot more, like, easy.
Yes, much more accessible.
Yeah. So I guess this answers my question. It was the frustrations with the current editors that kind of fueled Doom Builder, perhaps.
Yes, I think you could say that. I did try a few other editors at the time. There is Deep Sea was there, and there was Wadded, and there's a couple of others, Death and a few other old ones.
Right.
And I still liked Wadded because, believe it or not, at some point I figured out how the editor works and I could actually do something with it. But there was no editor around that you could actually go in the three-dimensional mode, 3D mode,
right. It was called
the other one, and could actually see what am I doing, what am I building here, and actually make adjustments in there. There was no editor that could do that. You always had to start the game if you wanted to see what your actions resulted in. And I kind of felt that could have been done better in these days with the technology, with the computers we have today.
Right. Yeah. I would say that's probably Doom Builder's like biggest selling point, like that type of interactive view. And you could just like point at walls and change textures like on the fly. Even though with Doom Builder 1, you had to kind of build the nodes of the map first, which I guess was how its rendering algorithm works. Like you actually,
you're doing a good job selling it like it's something beautiful. But these days, editors for all sorts of games, it's common sense that you can do these things that way.
yeah. But I mean, it was just so momentous at the time. I mean, you had editors like for Quake, like Worldcraft and the like, and they had like kind of like a view that was like that, but like the Doom kind of lacked that, and so Doom Builder kind of filled that particular need. I read somewhere though on the I believe it was the main site where you could download Doom Builder that it was taught in schools in China.
When
did you find that out?
A Dutch guy named is Scorpion. I'm not sure if he wants his real name mentioned. he moved to China and he is a teacher at a Chinese school I believe something with computer interaction and the computer classes, and he uses Doom Builder to actually give the kids a feel for working with the computer. How do you interact with a computer? How do you use programs that you can put your creativity in? And he actually sent me back a few maps that the kids made. That was very nice to see.
Wow, that's really cool. Because it's one thing to see your work like used by the community at large, but it's another thing to have like an educational institution kind of also use it as well, which is really cool. I guess the staff over there had no issue with say Doom's subject matter or like its content really, but like just the they focused more on the technology and the interactivity.
Well, he is still employed, so I think that was all fine.
Excellent. Later on, after the first incarnation of Doom Builder, you said at some point, I suppose, that this warrants a rewrite. Was it because of say experience coding other things on the side that you went back and said, you know what, I know how to do some things better, maybe I should rewrite this thing, or what was the reasoning behind it? Was that
you got that right? You develop yourself, you get more experience, and at some point, indeed, I said, I can do this much better now.
Right.
and there's features that I wanted when I made Doom Builder 1, I was kind of limited by my experience and there's features that at some point I thought of, that would actually be very logical, right? Why wouldn't we be able to see it that way? Why can't we do this or why can't we do that? And in Doom Builder 2, I really went for those things that I said, okay, just do things that actually should be really obvious, but at the time weren't, and were not. I didn't have the skills either to implement them. So yeah, that's why I said, you know, let's make this thing much better now.
Yeah, I would say that one of the biggest changes between Doom Builder 1 and Doom Builder 2 was, well, probably not only the platform, but it's a rendering engine. You didn't have to build the maps nodes in order to render things.
Yes.
And I'm guessing you kind of was it say like another work that you said, you know what, the rendering code that I'm using now is probably like way better suited than say BSP traversal.
Yes, it's Doom Builder 1's code was inspired by JDooms. I believe his name is Jaco Kiran.
Yeah,
I cannot pronounce it. Sorry.
Yeah, probably Jaco Kiran or something.
That's his Doom source port, and the way it works is it builds the nodes. And from those nodes, it creates polygons, and it does that in a very, very inefficient way.
Oh, really?
but for Doom, for the information you have at hand, there is no real better way to do it. Right?
Yeah, you'd have to like traverse. Well, it's a two-dimensional BSP tree, and that's, you know.
Yeah, it's very limited information because the Doom engine doesn't need anything else. The way it renders isn't with triangles. Doom doesn't render with triangles. It has a complete different approach.
Yeah, and like the columns and pixels, and then like from what I remember, it kind of builds things like close to the camera first, and then far away, and it does like a filling algorithm for the floors. It's kind of scary to look at.
it just has enough information the way it is, and if you want to make polygons from for the sector floors, you kind of need a little bit more information about it, and you traverse the BSP tree to create the polygon that you need. Basically, you start out with a giant polygon and you start cutting it with the same cuts that the BSP tree does, the same splits. That's the term they use. The splits in the BSP tree is what you're going to cut the polygon with, and then at the leaf of the tree, the leaf that you were aiming for, the subsector that you were aiming for, at that point when you arrive there, you have the polygon for that subsector.
Yeah, like it's not depth first. It's a very recursive process. Like you travel until you reach the end and build everything before that.
Yes, and you have to repeat it all over again for other subsectors, and it's horrible. but that's the way Doom Builder 1 did it, because I looked at JDoom's way of how they did it, and that worked for me.
But like Doom Builder 2 seems to be using a completely different method.
Yeah, that's something that I thought up. Actually, it took me months to. That's probably the most interesting technical, how do you say it, feature, technical thing in Doom Builder's source code. I find it personally the most interesting thing, because I spent months on making that work perfectly. It had to work perfectly, because otherwise you cannot do it that way. I mean, it has to look good, right? The sector polygons have to be right. If they're not right, why look at them at all?
Yeah. So basically does it use like just I guess more than a simple frustum culling and bounding boxes?
There's actually three steps involved, and you can do them per sector. So what Doom Builder does is it doesn't rebuild the whole thing all the time. It just checks out, okay, these and these sectors have changed shape. then I have to regenerate only the pieces for those sectors. Mm. So that saves time. And the three steps involved is, what was it? I believe the first thing is cutting polygons. Mm. That means they're you're making you have like shapes. You have these sectors. They're like very complex polygons. Sectors can become very complex. They can have islands. Right. They can have holes in them. They're extreme.
There's like huge. Complex. So there's a huge tessellation step basically before.
Yeah, it's a step that actually makes a sector one continuous line. And you don't see that because if that has an island somewhere far away, right? Well, basically what it does, it makes two lines towards the island. So that you basically you can draw it with a pencil. You can draw the shape without leaving the pencil tip from the paper.
Ah,
right.
Yeah.
That's what it generates first in the first step. And after that, there is I can't remember from the top of my head. I need to look it up. But then the last step is there's a sorting step as well, making a tree of it, and then there's cutting, making it one line, and then there is ear clipping, which is an algorithm. I have to say, I didn't completely thought it up myself. I was inspired by some algorithm that does something similar, and it basically creates triangles from the final polygon, and it does this really fast. It works really great. Mm. And that basically allows me to open up a 3D view without building nodes, without doing anything. You just instantly have that 3D view, and it also works for viewing textures in two-dimensional modes.
It must have been like probably a pain to like get all the texture offsets correct, like, you know, just depending on the say like the line def information, the 64 by 64 grid that's over everything, and then when you incorporate the UDMF extensions, which you could alter scaling and stuff like that. I could imagine that like the calculation steps are probably, I mean, not
actually not. No, they're actually very simple.
So well, it's like it's, you have like one formula that you apply to, I guess, the
whole process. To every vertex, you have one formula that applies to everything. It takes a bit of tinkering with it, of course.
Right.
You have to fiddle a bit with it. You don't get it right in the first try. You never do with such things, but it's not rocket science, really.
Caesar, would you agree? Caesar?
Everything about Doom is rocket science. You guys don't know what you're talking about.
I would have to say that, like, altogether, the Doom Builder experience is probably what contributes most to its success. Though I do notice that even with the better version of Doom Builder out, Doom Builder 2, people seem to be still like hesitant to move from Doom Builder 1. And why do you think that is?
I think there is different reasons for it. Some people might have one reason, some people might have another. One of a few that I can think of or that I have read is platform. I believe Doom Builder 2 starts off at XP, Windows XP. You need Windows XP for it or newer.
Yeah, I think that because it runs with a .NET framework rather than something.
And there may be a few other things. Or it was Windows 2000. I'm not sure. I think I put it on XP as the minimum platform. And there's people that might be working on an older platform. They're basically limited to Doom Builder 1. And there's people that just find the drawing features of Doom Builder 1 nicer. They're kind of used to the way Doom Builder 1 does things, and that's how that works best for them.
I remember that the Doom Builder 2 kind of had that, like, you could just draw geometry and it would know how to split everything up into sectors, and like that, I thought that was like the probably like the best part of it. It's like, wait a minute, I really want this, like, this skylight to be here, but I don't want to divide up all of these other sectors. I know, I'll just draw it and have Doom Builder take care of it. and I gotta say, that's probably the biggest feature that I absolutely love about it. Like, it just, it's very intelligent about how it splits up the geometry.
I would say it's the second biggest feature.
Yeah.
but it does add a lot of comfort for the user, and I've also spent quite some time getting that right.
I could imagine. It seems
to make that.
Yeah, it seems like a very, very reasonably intelligent algorithm. I mean, like, if you can trip it up with like very, very awkward things added to sectors, but
you can break it. You can definitely cause a situation in which a scenario in which it will do something weird that you don't expect, but with these things it's very hard to make every scenario work properly. And I figured out at some point that it's not worth thinking of certain scenarios as long as the most common things, the things that mostly happen, if they work perfectly, then you're already quite a quite far, you know, quite it works quite well.
At some point you have to say this is in the user's hands. If they screw up, they screw up, you know.
there is undo.
Yeah. that's all one man could ask for, I guess. The undo button. It looks like Doom Builder was so successful that it kind of has additional forked projects off of it, like GZ Doom Builder and Doom Builder 64.
Yeah, I'm really happy that happened. Because I don't have the time anymore to work on Doom Builder. It's kind of a finished product, right? It's mature. Most of the bugs are fixed. I'm sure you can browse the forums and find one. But most of the bugs that a normal user would find, they're all fixed. It's stable. So for me, that is a complete project, and I'm done working on it. So I'm really happy that these guys they picked it up where I left off, and they specialize Doom Builder for a certain purpose, for a certain source port. There is Kaiser, who you earlier had an interview with a while back. He made Doom Builder 64. Which is for Doom 64, because it's quite a different format. There's a bunch of new features in it,
Especially like the colored sectors and the how it has to do texture rendering because of the N64's 64x64 texture memory limitation, it's a texture mapping implementation. So it's so it has, like, you know, it has to do several other things that the Doom engine doesn't in order to make it compatible with the version of Doom
64. And then there's Muxed. Not sure if I pronounce his nickname correctly. Muxed. Mm-hmm. Maxed. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what he prefers. he made a branch of Doom Builder 2 for Z Doom and GZ Doom, which is completely filled with all sorts of features that the source port supports.
So it's like all the polygonal models and room over room rendering and stuff like that, right?
Exactly. It shows models. It has so many features. Too many. I cannot think of them all. It has a giant list of modifications and additions that people working for those source ports just love to have And I didn't really spend time on working on those features because I intended Doom Builder to be a very generic editor which works for all the source ports. So that's why Doom Builder 2 stays like that, yeah. Right? I'm not gonna specialize it for a certain source port. I made plugin support. Some plugins add features for certain source ports.
Yeah,
like
from what purposes. I can think. Yeah, the Visplane yeah. Explorer is a big one.
Yeah. That's Andrew Apted who initially came up with that idea. But the plugins do not allow unlimited control over how things are done in Doom Builder and the abilities you can do. So at some point, it makes sense to say, okay, we cannot work with plugins. We cannot implement everything we want. So they make a branch off of Doom Builder 2, and they start just modifying the whole editor to make it do what it does.
So it looks like, if you're going to write a plugin system, you kind of have to write the editing program around that sort of system. Like, it has to be like in the back of your head at all times, like especially if it has to extend like a rendering view or extend like
yes
additional...
yes, but you have to realize that no matter how complex or beautiful you make your plugin system, it is always limited to what it can add or change in the program. There's no way around that.
Yeah.
That's just the way plugin systems work. As you write your editor, you have to keep in mind there's plugins, right? Give the plugin a chance to interrupt or to do something here. That's always something you pay attention to. Yes.
Yeah, a lot of like every single action you'd have to call like an interface that that goes through like I guess the list of implemented plugins. Like, can it do this? No. Okay, skip
yep.
that and keep going.
Yep.
So it's a whole additional piece of programming or
and you have to notify plugins of certain things, like for example when a user starts to copy something or paste something, or even worse when the user wants to undo. If the undo is not a plugin system, that sits in the core of the editor because it has to. It's so involved with everything. If the user wants to do undo, so that means he presses Control Z. You have to go through a couple of checks and warnings that are sent off to the plugins. From we're gonna undo, prepare for undo.
Yeah,
if you want to abort, if you want to cancel this, prohibit this in some way, now is your chance.
Yeah, it's like you have to write in I guess in this case it's like kind of like if any event happens in Doom Builder, all the plugins that were loaded have to be notified of it, and then if one of them has a problem with it, like it kind of kills the whole line of calls.
You can definitely screw things up if the plugin is not taking into account these things. If it cannot take into account that undo can be triggered, you can definitely break things, and you don't want that. So you have to inform the plugin so that the programmer of the plugin can respond appropriately.
I would definitely say that Doom Builder as a project, as a program, and is a complete success. Like from the Doom community and to anybody out there who wants to make anything Doom Engine wise, I have my theories about its success. What do you think attributes to its success? Is it its features or is it accessibility? What do you think?
What do I think? I think that it's mostly the missing parts that were not in the in any other editor, like 3D mode. That was initially from Doom Builder 1, something that people didn't have that before, so that helps. and later with Doom Builder 2, it's just I just added so much to it, a lot of user friendliness to it, and that helps as well, I think.
Zazer, you have anything to add about Doom Builder in general, or any questions for Pascal?
I don't really suppose I have too much questiony things aside from what you've talked about. I guess I mostly kind of have little anecdotes here or there about, oh, I remember when I did this with Doom Builder, that with it. I've always been more of the editor type myself, so at the beginning the Doom connector stuff kind of was a little out of my area of expertise. But I do want to say it was actually I just remember when Doom Builder coming out, it was really cool, the timing of it, because my previous experience with editors was either A, it didn't do enough of what I wanted it to do, it was really hard to use. Like DoomCAD back in the day as well.
Oh god, I hated that program so much.
Tried using Death, and I couldn't figure out how to make sectors in it and all sorts of stuff.
Right.
The only thing I could even find that seemed to work okay was Deep Sea, and then you had to pay for it.
Yeah.
So like, now what?
That was a major thing that made me like Doom Builder. I mean, aside from its features, it was free, and I had no limits. And I'm like, who would use anything else?
Ta-da. Yeah, I did find it kind of amusing that he beat Deep Sea at its own game.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, it does
take that Deep Sea,
but, ha, 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 ha. All that good stuff. I guess the only other thing that I would specifically ask is, and I guess it was kind of touched on in a few different ways, but Doom Builder 1-2 did have a lot of really cool new features that we're adding. I mean, the biggest things being the enhanced drawing system and the rendering, as you guys pointed out. And mostly, was that, and directing, I'm asking Pascal this time, so I gotta preface my questions, otherwise I just ramble. Did you add these in kind of, were they ideas that you came up with in your own experience or that you thought of, or did you kind of observe the community and notice that what was happening? Kind of what was your inspiration for adding these sorts of things mostly?
There are things that people were suggesting, definitely. And I had to consider technical feasibility. Some things I had to turn down. And that's always unfortunate because you're going to disappoint someone.
Can you think of a feature that you had to turn down that I guess you'd think back and say, "Ooh, I wish I added that"?
I do not regret turning things down. Really, it's just unfortunate that you have to disappoint someone. But
what was a feature that you got either harangued about and couldn't add, or didn't want to add, or anything notable? That you said.
I think it was source port specific things. There were many source port specific things that I turned down because I didn't want to go that way. I think that's some of the. I can't recall one from the top of my head that exactly one in detail, but yeah, it's many source port related things that I said, no, I'm not going to do that.
Just to keep the project, I guess, as general as possible, Doom Engine-wise.
Yeah, definitely. A funny thing, talking about that, is that the maker of GZ Doom, Graf Zal, and what's his name?
Randy Height.
Quasar.
Oh, Quasar. Yeah.
The guy of the Eternity source port.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of jumped in at the right time while I was developing Doom Builder 2 to suggest a new map format for Doom.
Oh, is that UDMF?
Yeah, that's UDMF, and they asked me, you know, join this conversation, work with us to make this map format work, and a bunch of other people got involved in the conversation as well, but not everybody agreed with the way it was going,
right?
And well, they basically, or they left the conversation, or they stayed in the conversation and just try to point out as many things that that it's not going to work. And
yeah, yeah, like you had your own, you had your very own amateur architecture review board for a standard.
It wasn't my thing. It was actually on the Doomworld forums going on, and yeah, we discussed a lot there about UDMF, and it was the right time because I was developing Doombuilder 2, and that's the exact right time because I could adjust my development to optimize the editor for that map format, and that worked really well. And we fixed that map format. If you ask me, of course, it's a very good map format. But that's me.
Yeah. It's basically like the rest of the formats, the ZDoom / Hexen format, and the, you know, the original Doom format of are just subsets, like theoretical subsets of UDMF.
Yes.
So
but they all follow the same standards, the same format. They use the same format, but they can add values to it. So you can have like a sector which has a ceiling height, a floor height, a ceiling texture, a floor texture, and a brightness.
Yeah.
Probably forgetting something, but that's the general idea. And then a source port can add color to it, or fog, amount of fog to it,
yeah,
or
and then it
other
would,
things.
Yeah, and then if another source port read that same UDMF or it didn't support that namespace, it could either say, I don't support this namespace, or it just discarded
just
the additional features.
Yeah, and you can just ignore the features if you like. And in Doombuilder, you can see this that there's support for all these source ports. They have they each have their own configuration, and they have these UDMF additions for each source port. They have them in there, so you can go in Doombuilder, and there is always a custom tab for everything in Doombuilder, and where you can see all these features, and you can simply configure them. So basically in ZDoom, you can simply go to the custom tab for a sector and say, I want the lighting color to be this, and I want this amount of fog in it. And that really helped boosting the popularity of the map format. So that timing was perfect.
Excellent. Yeah, UDMF, even though it hasn't seen, I guess, too much use, I mean, and in terms of, say, like most Doom maps and projects, in order to keep things, I guess, to a wider audience. But definitely for ZDoom-centric or any other major source ports, it seems to be the map format that everybody's going with.
Yeah, I think Max said GZ Doom Builder is actually also all his additions are built around the use of UDMF format, so that, you know, he just where I would have a custom tab where you can set colors or lighting or stuff like that, he just makes a feature in the editor that you can actually see it and change it in the 3D mode or something like that. So he adds all his features around that, and that's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's making very good use of the abilities you have there.
Awesome. So do you use a lot of the I guess the knowledge that you've gleaned from making these utilities and stuff like that for your outside of the Doom community titles such as Blood Masters and currently Rampage M?
Yeah, actually, Blood Masters was made with Doombuilder. The maps were made with Doombuilder, and for Rampage, it is a branch of Doombuilder. So I basically took the source code, the latest source code of Doombuilder, and put it in. It's not in our game engine, but we're using a modified version of Doombuilder 2 as our editor, and it adds a bunch of features, just like GZ Doombuilder does. You can have floors over floors. You can see them in 3D mode. What else is there? There's environment settings that you can change and fade when you walk from one sector to another. You can actually configure it with colors and say, okay, this is where it's going to fade to another environment settings, which means different lighting, ambient lighting, directional lighting, stuff like that.
Wow. And so it, like,
camera changes, stuff like that. You can actually make complete surfaces, it's a very technical term, a thin plate spline surface, which is a curved surface along which the camera can move. You can make all that in the editor, but the editor is not the features that I added. They're not very user friendly. We do not intend to release it with the game so that people can make their own maps, because we don't think that adds a lot to the game. We don't think it would be used a lot. So
does a Rampage M use say like a flavor of the UDMF or a namespace of the UDMF format, or does it?
Yep.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, it's in UDMF. Yes, definitely.
Wow.
Yeah.
I saw like the footage of it and everything, and like I would not have guessed that it still used like a almost like a Doom engine sort of data model. But it's wow. I guess hey, so as long as Doom stays in today's technology in certain ways, I'm fine with that. So any other questions for Pascal? Zazer?
No, not currently. Bloodmasters is kind of an interesting one, because I do remember playing it around with a bit, and I nearly almost made a map with it, and then didn't. Now I'm sad. That would have been a fun thing to add is, oh, by the way, but nah.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Well, I believe we've covered all the bases here. I believe this has been a rather enlightening first episode of Knee Deep in the Code, wouldn't you say?
Definitely. It was my pleasure to be here and give you the interview.
It's a pleasure to have you, especially as our first guest. Such a kind of like a I guess father of modern Doom editing is a little bit too generous, but hey, whatever. All flattery's good, I guess. All right. So thank you very much for joining us this week on our first episode ever of Knee Deep in the Code. I'm Matt Tropiano, and that was Zazer and our very special guest, Pascal von der Heiden, a.k.a. Codimp. Farewell, everybody, and happy dooming.